Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge a glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
Goalkeepers who wanted the ground to open up and swallow them whole, unexpected left-back wonder goals, the inevitability of Phil Babb, the eternal debate of Lilian Nalis versus Mario Stanic, Marco Buga's mythical caravan, Facundo Sava's silly mask, and yes, obviously, Ali Dyer. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés and the Premier League players we remember for precisely one thing 11. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £3.49 a month. That's 30% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 87 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me, first of all, is James Moore. We all know what we're here for. There's a danger with this particular 11 that we're choosing of veering into the Premier League's 50 most shocking moments territory, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I mean, are we looking for famous or infamous? I don't want to kind of paraphrase Partridge too early, but that does seem to be an important distinction.
No, I mean, this is a surprisingly open-ended concept. I wanted to leave it so that people would suggest a variety of names. But no, this doesn't have to be a good thing that you're remembered for. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. It can be an incredibly boring thing, but it does have to be a single thing. And the rest of that can be interpreted as anybody wants. But I feel like there's enough layers here is what I'm asking. There's depth to this. Surprising depth.
Yeah, I'd say so. I was very excited when you explained it to me, so I think this is going to be good.
That's good. I'm delighted to hear that. Alongside you, equally Premier League era literate Nick Miller. Are you clear what we're aiming for here? I always have to ask this before we do our 11s.
Yeah, I think so. There's enough scope for it to kind of bring in various different things. But yeah, I think we know what we're doing here. Yeah.
Good. Okay, so before we launch into our Premier League players we remember for precisely one thing, 11, I have a very important issue to run past you both. On Tuesday night, a man called Nick Murphy sent me a picture of his TV screen. And he says, I'm watching Cruel Summer on Amazon, set in 1993. The main protagonist is flicking through the US TV channels and manages to stumble upon what appears to be a QPR home game, maybe against Norwich. And I thought, I need to help him, James. I've got to help this guy. At a glance, I couldn't be asked to figure out what it was. So I thought, I'll do the honourable thing and retweet it. We quickly established that it was a QPR home game, but it really did unravel from there. My first thought, actually, it wasn't Norwich. The shirts are too dark. Can you imagine how far this unraveled from there.
Yeah, I can. I've seen the tweets.
Yeah, good.
I mean, this is right up your street as well, this. I mean, I can imagine how excited you were. This is probably the most excited you've been sat in your bedroom for, I don't know how many years.
Fantastic. Yes, lovely way of putting it. I mean, this is how it developed. QPR superfan Rob Roberts-Facey of BBC Montage fame stepped in next, Nick, to confirm that it was QPR versus Wolves, in fact. Good to have the teams confirmed. And he says, I only think about this because I'm sure it was also used in this advert. And he links to the Figo Just for Men advert, which, of course, we've mentioned it on this podcast before.
So many strands. Yeah, so many strands being brought together here.
So at this point, I'm watching the Luis Figo Just for Men advert. And yes, there it is in the background. QPR versus Wolves 1998 nil-nil is on in the background. Why? Why is this game already the go-to popular culture football approximation reference point?
I think someone may have pointed this out in the comments, but the sort of boringly plausible answer is just the first thing that comes up when someone types in stock football game into some kind of database. But maybe it's just the bright colours. I don't know.
The kits are good. It's a good combination of kits, isn't it? A gold kit and a sort of hooped kit. It feels like... You know, we've talked before about those kind of bog standard birthday cards you get. I think there's a kind of quite often the kind of colour combinations you get, like one hoops kit, when in reality there aren't really that many clubs in play in hoops.
That's right.
And a really bright, garish kit. It kind of feels like that might be part of the reason.
So the saga was developing by this point, late into Tuesday night. We'd established who the teams were. We think we worked out what the fixture was. It was a midweek game and they played each other on the 1st of April 1998 on a Wednesday night. Then Wolves Analytics piped up, James. It says, I've tried to narrow that down before because it appears in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 as an Easter egg. So you're in some sort of dark abandoned office or something, and there it is on a computer screen is QPR versus Wolves 1998, like a someone run. It's like a behind the goal angle of someone running down the wing from the very same game. Astonishing scenes. This is why would a computer game get it? This is I can't believe this.
Well, I think it's fair to question the computer game bit because I just had a look at the team for QPR.
Yeah.
And there is actually a Hollywood actor in the QPR team. I think this should be gettable because there can't be too many Hollywood actors that are playing in the Premier League.
Vinny Jones.
Playing for QPR alongside the likes of Neil Ruddock and Nigel Quasi.
Are you implying that Vinny Jones brokered the deal?
When was this? 1998. It was around the time he was starting to do all those films, wasn't it? It's not impossible.
No, it's not. And, you know, it could have stopped there, Nick. It could have stopped there, and we thought, oh, well, that's about as far as the cultural reach of QPR nil, Wolves nil could have gone in the last 20-odd years. But no, Benjamin JH92 piped up. This pound for pound, the most astonishing shout of all. He says, actually, it's also in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the 2005 forgettable epic blockbuster in the poker scene. And he basically says, you had to be quick because it only appears on the left-hand side of the screen for the first half a second. How do you know this? Imagine your brain working that well.
This sounds like some kind of private investigator that was employed by Jennifer Aniston to kind of really sort of drill down into what actually happened on the set of that film has really got into the minutiae of it.
Sorry, do you think Jennifer Aniston thought Brad Pitt was having an affair with Steve Roberts? Is that what you're saying?
Look, yeah, anything
can
happen.
She really liked his disproportionate propensity for screamers into the top right-hand corner.
Yeah.
I will probably kind of tweet out a montage of all the evidence of this after after we release the podcast. But just to confirm, the Mr. and Mrs. Smith scene, the QPR versus Wolves game is on a screen in the background that I would estimate takes up about 7% of the width of the screen for about half a second. Benjamin H, 92... You are an astonishing human being, and I hope you're listening. It took me down an even further rabbit hole, James, of what's called texture archaeology in mid-90s computer games, but we're not going to talk about that. So on to the matter at hand, after that astonishing... How can we top that? How can we top that? And we're going to top that by doing the Premier League players we remember for precisely one thing, 11. So, Nick, to you, first of all, this is the mission, the vibe, the discourse. Players who, by hook or by crook, we really do only remember for one event, one incident, or perhaps one habit, one ongoing saga. There are lots of options that suddenly pop out.
Yeah, well, starting with the goalkeeper, I initially had Masamoto Ayubi written down, but I then disqualified him because there were two sort of ricks in that game. So I don't know whether that...
Oh, no, that's okay.
Is that okay? Like,
horror show performances can be condensed into a thing.
Okay.
I don't want to get too bogged down into what we define as a thing.
Surely people only remember one, right? The Pahars one. Oh, the Letizia one, sorry, that kind of bubbles over his shoulder. So, right, they only remember that one.
No, the Letizia one went through his legs.
Well, he can't go in there, can he? Because I don't remember at all.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so Taibbi As many players in this 11 will feel, James, is it perhaps too easy a shout? Sam writes in and says, the story about him being man of the match on his debut against Liverpool is an increasingly mentioned Taibbi footnote. I don't have a clue if it's true or not. This little caveat about Taibbi whenever he's brought up, usually from United fans, understandably, it feels like one of football's most enduring well actuallys, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is that thing that you'll see on Premier League years in that season. Is it 2000, 2001, I think? You'll see that, and you see him suddenly appear and they'll be like, oh, and Manchester United... I'm sorry, I'm not Charlie Eccleshire, I can't do the impression. And Manchester United signs... Massimo Taibbi from whichever mediocre Italian team.
Vicenza.
And you think, oh, here we go, here it comes. And then the first thing you see is his Liverpool game where he makes a few saves and I think United, did you let them win 2-1, I think, maybe? So yeah, but I mean, again, no one remembers that either, do they? They only remember the one the one thing. But I do agree with you that it is too obvious. In a similar vein, one of the other names I've written down is Peter Enkelman.
Okay.
Who obviously is famous for actually technically wasn't a mistake, was it? He actually did the right thing by letting the ball go in the back of the net, given it was a throw-in.
He's an incredibly good shout. I want to park him for the moment, but we just park.
Well, I've got a third one as well that I think is good, who's definitely not famous for making a mistake. He's famous for never playing, and that's Stuart Taylor.
Oh, I don't know whether he can
be in the team or whether he has to be on the bench.
Yeah.
The one thing he's famous for is never playing.
Yeah, this is worryingly where the definition of thing is really going to come back and haunt us. But I'm very happy with that suggestion. Very good shout. Nick, here's one for you. Wild State suggests Stefan Postma. I believe he's... I mean, he hasn't explained it, so I assume it's about him conceding a penalty immediately after coming on for his Premier League debut for Aston Villa against Southampton in 2002. Not sure. I mean, it must be that. I mean, who can forget? Where were you? Where were you when Stefan Postma conceded straight away on his Premier League debut?
Google it and check.
Oh, no, it is definitely that, and I would invite anyone to Google Stefan Postma to see that one moment that everyone remembers him for.
Absolutely. But, Nick, do you know who he replaced that day in the Aston Villa goal?
Was it Peter Enkelman?
It was Peter Enkelman.
Oh, there you go.
It feels like destiny now. Simon 1927 writes in, James, and says, Peter Enkelman for conceding that goal from a throw-in. My mind immediately panicked. I thought it might have been a League Cup tie. That would have disqualified him. That was a dangerous moment. And I'm sorry to go all Nick Hancock on you for a moment, but I think that's the most pathetic a Premier League player has ever looked.
Well, when the Birmingham fan is on the pitch, like kind of berating him all in his face, and he just looks completely forlorn.
Yeah, with all due respect.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those moments where you think it probably would have been fine if he'd smacked the bloke, right? I mean, we're not condoning violence, but I don't think it would have been the worst thing in the world.
Mm, agreed. And crucially here, Nick, I don't think Enkelman has a well actually caveat. So I think he's pretty watertight here, don't you?
Yeah, he did play, when I was looking this up, did play a surprising number of games for Aston Villa, 52 games for Aston Villa. So I don't know. Mm. I don't know whether there was something else in that those other 52 games that we might remember him for.
Can you imagine how many ironic ways were sent his way every time?
Every single back pass for the rest of his career.
Throw it to him, don't do it.
I did actually had Peter Enkelman down, and initially I did discount him because I got him mixed up with Stefan Postma. And I thought the thing that we remember Stefan Postma for, obviously that game that we just discussed was also applied to Peter Enkelman, but it turns out it doesn't, so I think Enkelman qualifies.
Yeah, well, we're definitely not talking about Stefan Postma anymore. No, Enkelman. Peter Enkelman is our goalkeeper for the Premier League players we remember for precisely one thing 11. This is a 4-3-3, by the way, as all themed 11s should be. Let's go to right back now, please, James. Got any names you can fire at me straight away?
Yeah, the one that leapt out at me, and I did spend quite a long time last night trawling list of right backs in the Premier League.
Good.
Pascal Tchimbonda handing in his transfer request on the pitch at Highbury in what was ultimately, one, the last game at Highbury, and two, the last game of his time at Wigan.
Okay. As the kind of adjudicator here, self-appointed adjudicator, I think Tchimbonda had the kind of... Nick, back me up here. He had this kind of general banter presence in the mid-2000s, which I don't think it's fair to pin down to one incident.
I don't know. Did he? Can you provide us with another banter sort of incident that he was...
Unless you count wearing gloves all the time.
Yeah.
Yes, as 40% of the people involved in this podcast recording have just said, he was known for wearing gloves. I mean, that's a thing. That is a thing, isn't it? He was one of the most enduring glove wearers. Pioneer, if anything.
Yeah.
I just think he was just sort of widely acclaimed as being not a comedy figure, but as a kind of...
I guess another thing is that he went to the World Cup as a, with France as a Wigan player as well.
Yes.
Which is, that's definitely a thing.
Yeah, that is a thing. That's it. I'm going to set him aside because I'm sure we're going to come up with better names here. Are you done with that? Is that the card you're playing?
He's my card.
Okay. Nick, give me some right backs.
Well, he was my card as well, unfortunately.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, but does this... If let's for the moment accept that he is a more sort of general banter presence in the footballing oeuvre of the sort of early 2000s. Did that not stem from his hasty submission of a transfer request?
Maybe. Okay, he's creeping back into contention. Okay, well, I offer you two names via Matthew Doolan. He says Moritz Voltz, who scored the 15,000th Premier League goal, which gave him the nickname 15,000 Volts. He only That's scored rubbish. Twice for Fulham in the Premier League. Not having it,
isn't
not
he,
having...
Isn't he famous for being like a massive... I've forgotten his
David
name.
David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
Thank you, David Hasselhoff. Yeah,
he had a big, he had a sort of quirky blog in the mid to late 2000s, didn't he? Which I guess you could argue extends his legacy too far.
I mean, is the blog within the realm of the Premier League? That's the question.
He was also, until recently, and I haven't looked this up, he was Julian Nagelsmann's assistant at RB Leipzig. So does he now work for Bayern Munich then? I mean, if only there was some way to find this out, but I haven't looked this up.
I'll close this Stefan Posma tab and I'll have a look.
Maybe just check his blog. Maybe he's still going. I don't think you're going to like this next one, although I do. Wally Say says, Antonio Valencia, James, and his low crosses.
Yeah, that's not bad.
You can't have someone who literally played in Champions League finals for Manchester United and, you know, probably a couple of hundred appearances for them, which remembered for just one thing.
And
I'm not against a player with like a trademark move being in the team on that basis, but that isn't one that leaps out on me, I don't think.
I agree. We're getting closer to the kind of general concept of the thing, but I agree with you. Well, in that case, Nick's raising a finger. Hopefully it's a right-back related one.
It is. I don't know if this qualifies, and it's remembered for one thing in a very sort of specific niche corner of the internet, but Tony Hibbert for that gif of him sort of turning around on the ball and just then eventually passing it to no one, is that...
I feel that's secondary to his long servingness.
Yeah, I guess so.
Don't you think? And the fact that he didn't really score any goals.
Yeah.
And that photo of him holding a massive fish.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. It was just off the top of my head. I'd settled on Chimbonda too early, I think. I had nothing else
to back
it up.
So have we all, it seems. In the absence of any competition for places at right back, Pascal Chimbonda is our right back. For this,
I suspect it's how he got to that World Cup as well, isn't it?
Yes. Same selection policy as Raymond Domenech. Let's go with that. Right, left back though, as always, far more interesting and far more exciting. I'm just going to throw names at you straight away, James. Eric Edmond.
Goal at Anfield. Lovely. Yeah,
Robert Yarny.
That's nice. So he didn't play a game, did he? He went to Coventry from
Betis, I think.
Correct.
Yeah, and then went immediately to Real Madrid.
Yeah. Widely accepted as some sort of workaround for some clause he had that he couldn't move to another Spanish club/accountancy trick. But Coventry made a cool £1 million profit on him. Maybe this, again, enhances his legacy too much, but he's one of those players who was so quick that it was obliged to mention his 100-metre time, his apocryphal 100-metre time, when talking about how quick he was. Signed off the back of a World Cup. Yeah, he did one thing in the Premier League, which was pass through like a connecting flight. So I'm happy with that. But Edmund also could shout. Two more for you, Nick. Ben Thatcher and Winston Bogard.
Now I've got Bogard at centre back.
Oh, okay.
But my two choices were Robert Yanni and Ben Thatcher. I don't know, but I sort of vaguely discounted Thatcher because he is remembered for the Pedro Mendes thing, but was he also remembered, and this is obviously connected to, as a sort of more general purpose thug?
Oh no, he was a prolific elbower.
Yeah,
at least three truly brutal elbows in his Premier League career, which, you know, turns it into a kind of serial offender.
It's a trademark.
Yeah.
Like we said, I think that works. I had a couple of options, one of which I think played at centre back quite a bit, but was a left back too, and was a prolific scorer of penalties, but was also the bloke who went to Aston Villa and then immediately went back to Everton, and that is of course David Unsworth.
Okay. Okay.
I think, does anyone remember? I mean, he scored the penalty for Wigan at Sheffield United that kept them up. Mm. And it was quite a big one. I mean, I guess if you're a Wigan, it's been a lot of Wigan in this so far, by the way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think he sits more comfortably in the pure Barclays 11, if anything.
Maybe. Maybe.
Can we explore Eric Edmond a bit more, Nick? Because we're talking about a guy who did pretty much nothing. He gets, at least in my head, constantly mixed up with Rito Ziegler and scored an incredible goal. Like a properly incredible, what the hell has just happened? Nobody saw this coming goal. That's in front of the overwhelming cop as well, evidence by the way. In his favour.
I think of him as a sort of in this kind of parade of sort of slightly subpar left backs that Spurs signed around that time.
Lee Yong-pyo.
I'm getting a wagged finger from James here. No, is he?
No, sorry. It's only because I just remembered that Eric Edmond also played for Wigan.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the Wigan team from 2007-08. I'm going to put my foot down here about Eric Edmond. It's one of the most overwhelming cases of scored amazing goals. Or did nothing else.
Yeah.
Well, he just did nothing else.
He wasn't even exceptionally bad. He just wasn't that good. And then I think he was gone after a season. So yeah, that's definitely a strong case.
Okay. Mr. Spurs himself has given his approval. Eric Edmond is our left back. Right, centre half. Nick, who have you got at the top of your head?
Well, I've got, this might be very specific to me, but I've got Jason Cundy in my team. Because we of course know him now as a opinionated radio broadcaster. But in terms of his playing career, I can't think of anything else he did other than that goal at Ipswich.
Tackle goal from the halfway line against Ipswich.
Yeah, the kind of very niche genre of the unintentional long-range goal.
Definitely was Premier League. It was the first season of 91-92, and no one's really ever sure if it's Premier League or not.
He was wearing that lovely that yellow Spurs kit with the kind of stuff over the shoulder. It was one of the very early televised games, I seem to recall.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Can I throw two into the mix? One, similarly, a Premier League player of some repute, but will mainly be remembered for one goal, and that's Philippe Albert.
Okay, yep.
He's very Barclays 11 as well, though, I guess. I can't remember if he was in that.
Maybe pre-Barclays, I'd say.
I mean, fair, that is true, actually, yeah. And secondly, I don't think I need to explain this one, Phil Babb.
Phil Babb, possibly the most suggested name in the Twitter replies before we recorded. I'm unsure about Phil Babb. Let's spend a minute or two discussing that legacy. World Cup 94 veteran, played for Coventry, and then obviously hit his balls on the post against Chelsea. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be too obvious with this, Nick, but Phil Babb is, I'm drawn to him.
I mean, you really are underselling the hit his balls on the post. I mean, you know, for our younger listeners, I really wouldn't recommend looking this up, but my God.
Yeah.
I would. Welcome to our world. Come into our world. How dare you not know what happened to Phil Babb at Anfield against Chelsea? How dare you not know?
I suppose he would qualify because it would, certainly on at my school, he sort of became a verb at some point, you know, when that unfortunate incident did, you know, before someone, they had done a Phil Babb. So, yeah, I guess he qualifies.
Potential spanner in the Phil Babb works, James. He was one of the infamous white suit wearers at the FA Cup final in 1996. Now, whilst you could, and you may rightly point out this is not Premier League, I would also say it's part of the Premier League tapestry.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, the only other thing I remember Phil Babb for is being the proprietor of Golf Punk magazine. And remember that? That's kind of ill-advised attempt about 10 years ago to make golf look cool.
Sounds very ill-advised to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so Phil Babb, he may be losing his place here. I give you some further names, James. William Prunier.
Okay. Yeah,
as Mitchell
good.
Sterling writes, he was the New Year's Day hangover that made Chris Armstrong look like Gabriel Batistuta. Lovely little
correct.
Line. Alex says Liam Ridgewell for using £20 notes inappropriately. I don't think he's going to be remembered for that necessarily, so I'm not keen.
Is that another I shouldn't Google on a work computer? Or is it right?
100%. Okay, fine. Marcus Bridgeland, Sebastian Coates for the most ridiculous overhead kick versus QPR.
Oh, yeah. That's good. I mean, I'd completely forgotten he existed, so that is good.
I'd want to get hung up on wonder goals, but unexpected, you know, unbelievably unexpected wonder goals, definitely.
I mean, in this team, I think that's what you want from your defenders almost, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it does fit. Potential adjudication point here, Nick. James Dixon says, does Steve Morrow count? Premier League era, but dropped in the League Cup final. So no is my answer.
I suppose it's the same argument for the. I mean, was he kind of generally slightly hapless player, and did this sort of fit in with his general vibe, or was he? I mean, actually, maybe this is the point, because I can't remember anything else about Steve Morrow.
No,
until you mentioned that, I thought he was a midfielder. So I didn't even realise he was a defender.
He may well have been. See, also, Jamie Pollock, that infamous own goal was in Division 1, not having it. Can't be in our Premier League team. The final name I've got for you, Nick, is Santiago Vergini.
Sunderland?
Yeah, score of thumping Finnish own goal.
I don't remember that one, so...
Okay, well. Okay, well, to return to the top of that list then, James, William Prunier, I feel like he's a shoe-in here.
I mean, he's definitely a good one because people will literally only remember the one game. Did he play in any other games?
No, I don't think he did.
Did he sign for Spurs? I mean, everyone else did, so probably.
Exactly.
We should probably explain, so he played against Spurs at White Hart Lane on New Year's Day in January 96, I think it was. But Manchester United had a big defensive injury crisis, and then Peter Schmeichel had to go off injured at halftime as well. And Spurs won 4-1. It's a very precious childhood memory for me. So yeah, he was obviously absolutely terrible. I mean, I he's definitely a good shout, just purely because he's only played one game, I think. But that will be remembered.
I kind of very much sort of file him alongside the sort of Igor Stepanov's Torben Pekarik genre of brief, short-lived, incredibly shit Premier League centre-backs playing for big teams.
But wait. This is hot off the press-ish from William Prunier's Wikipedia page. It states about his debut against QPR, in fact, December 1995, he generally impressed in the match and assisted a goal for Andy Cole, as well as hitting a powerful shot against the bar. No one remembers that. I don't think that's enough.
No, exactly. That's fine. No one remembers it.
Dave,
it's fine.
Pasting that in. Not good enough. I'm keen on Prunier. I'm leaning towards Babb to an extent, but I feel like we have to cover this aspect of football, James. And when it comes to horror injuries, I offer you David Boost.
Yeah, he was another one. He was another one I did think of, but to be honest, I thought it was just it's a bit inappropriate, really, to mention that.
Well, I don't think it is.
I would say, by the way, genuinely, if you haven't seen that, genuinely, do not Google.
Well, no, absolutely, because it was the original Premier League horror injury, Nick. It's possibly the defining Premier League horror injury, and that is a genre in itself. You know, the kind of next day, don't look at it in the papers, but they're going to show it to you anyway, with a ring round it in the photograph, just because in case you can't see what's going on. I feel like it is a genre-defining incident, and that makes him a genre-defining player, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose that it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be anything to do with actually playing football, as we found out earlier with Stefan Posma. But yeah, that all you need. I just remember the pictures of Peter Schmeichel covering his face, and that's served as a sort of, well, if even this big hard man can't have a look at it, then
Okay, so despite being a overwhelming contender in my books, for reasons of taste and dignity, we're not having David Boost in our team. Maybe he produced a sterling performance in a 0-0 for Coventry in 1994-95 that we've overlooked. So are we happy then with William Prunier and Phil Babb?
Well, he was mentioned earlier on, but Winston Bahard is, I would say, was a contender.
All right then. I'm happy to have Bohada in instead of William Prunier, because because what I would say about Prunier is he's always included in the list of sort of shocking signings. But no one can remember anything about that game. He didn't do anything specifically sort of Woodgate-y bad.
Yeah, that's true.
I would be tempted to include Prunier just because, well, I don't really think I've got anyone else on my list that is just remembered solely for being shit. There's something else about plenty of the players on my list here are terrible, but that's the one thing he is remembered for, and I haven't really got anyone else here that is just thought
torn.
Of as terrible.
I'm going to write Phil Babb in big red letters so we can't lose him. So that's, and it comes down to Prunier or Bohada, and I'm going for William Prunier. William Prunier. Good case made, Nick. Fair play to you. So our back four, Pascal Chimbonda at right back, Eric Edmond at left back, and a centre-half partnership of Phil Babb and William Prunier. That is a clean sheet waiting to happen.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Our midfield trio, James, who have you got in mind?
Let's start with, I've got a good winger, but he's going to have to play in the front three, I guess. So I'm at least going to have to suggest him. So we'll have to come back to him. Yep. Let's start with David Dunn and his pathetic Rabona.
Because he appeared in the credits to what? Soccer AM, is it?
Yeah, it was a Soccer AM thing, wasn't it? Right. I think they showed it more or less every week. It was in there. Was it Taxi, I think, the thing, the kind of montage of
yeah.
Like,
and I feel like that artificially
blunders.
Boosts its... It's prominent.
Maybe, but I mean, it did happen. What else do you remember David Dunn for?
Briefly populating the problematic left-hand side for England.
I mean, you can say that for most players in the Premier League in that era.
Yes, that's also true. I don't know. I mean, he's well thought of in Blackburn circles, isn't he, Nick?
I'm sure he is. I'm not saying he's a bad player or a bad bloke, but people will only remember that one thing.
he is.
Don't blame me. It's the people. It's not my fault.
No, the case has been made. Nick, who have you got in mind for your midfield?
Right, well, I've got Danny, the former West Ham midfielder, purely for Harry Redknapp's quote about him, which, for anyone that doesn't remember, Danny was a kind of... He looked like a sort of Calvin Klein model. And he was that sort of good-looking where it was sort of acceptable for straight blokes in football to say, yeah, he's a good-looking bloke, isn't he? Mm. So Harry Redknapp said, he's so good-looking, I don't know whether to pick him or fuck him, which doesn't really make any sense, but that sort of qualifies as one of the... He could have done both.
Yeah.
But I think that qualifies as a player I remember for literally only one thing.
Bad man management. James, any competition for the midfield places?
Yeah, another player who I guess was kind of amplified by that kind of like late 90s sort of Soccer AM culture for a celebration-ish rather than a goal or a bit of skill, Tamori Ketsbayar.
Yes.
And his angry celebration against Bolton.
Yeah, a lot of people suggested him. Grundy said, if I said Tamori Ketsbayar to anyone and they didn't immediately think of him kicking the shit out of the hoardings, then they are lying. Very good player, but I genuinely can't remember anything else he did. So a lot of people pointed out that he scored a very well-worked free kick for Wolves, but that was in Division 1, so that doesn't count. So Ketsbayar, I think, is a shoe-in for this. Nick, I also offer you Seth Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, the story may well be embellished over time, but it's a very good story, and I still think you could be remembered for it.
Yeah, but it's just that classic, I don't really care if this is true or not, it illustrates a point about Leeds United at that time. So, just for anyone that doesn't somehow know this story, the story was that he went into contract negotiations with Leeds, and you know, before the agent said... He said they agreed an action plan and they said, we want to ask for 20 grand a week. And the first thing that Peter Ridsdale said when they got in was, right, 40 grand and not a penny more.
I'm enamoured by the story so much. And I do feel it's not doing him an injustice. In fact, it's not even his fault. So I'm quite happy to include him on that basis. So Seth Johnson, very much a contender. I quite like this one, I don't think I'm going to include him. Thrifty Gorilla, James, says Mauricio Solis, signed as one of the two Costa Rican internationals by Jim Smith at Derby. Never really got a game, known only by fans for being there to help Big Paolo set into the East Midlands. Not sure he was even needed at West Ham or City. Intrigued as I am by players who are signed just to keep someone company, don't think he's remembered for it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I had literally no idea who he was when you said his name. I think Southampton had a guy, a second Latvian, to live with Marian Bahars. I want to say it's Imants
Bledilis. Bledilis. Bristol City legend Astafjevs, Bledilis is correct. Actually, we should do a player signed suspiciously conveniently 11. That's one for very, very soon. Okay, I like this one, though. This debate, at least, I'm not happy with the suggestion. Mr. Keb says, Rory Delap and long throws, Nick. I still say that's a bit Rory Delap when I see a very long throw, and it makes me feel very old to think his son plays for City. I'm not happy with this, mainly because the long throws became such an enduring thing and such an effective thing that I don't know, maybe he does tick the box, but he also scored an incredibly ridiculously good goal for Southampton as well with that bicycle kick. I don't know, he felt like he transcends this, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's possibly, I don't know whether there is like an appearance limit on this team as well, because he must have played, you know, 300-400 games in the Premier League, and you know, I don't know if that sort of overrides
I think that's a good criteria to introduce.
Yeah,
someone who was really durable.
Yeah,
had a lot of games,
but it wasn't just that it was a long throw. It was the thing, you know. The trajectory of the throw that was what you know, made him notable. So I don't know. I think he would fall foul of the, you know, maximum appearances limit if we're gonna put a cap on him.
He's almost too famous for that thing. It was just like the biggest like theme of the Premier League in that season. He's one of the most famous people in the country for 6 or 7 months, just for the basis of that one thing.
But and also,
I just think it's just too big.
More news from producer Dave. Sorry, I to interject. He points out that Rory Delap actually has a throw-in section on his Wikipedia page, and it's really long.
But also, I seem to remember, because of course he played for Derby, it was Southampton before Stoke. And at Derby and Southampton, I don't remember the throw-in being a thing.
Yes.
It seemed to be like he went down to the Championship with Stoke and then emerged from it back. And then suddenly he had this kind of absolutely deadly long throw that I don't recall.
He had to take like a really quick throw in the 93rd minute when they were chasing a winner. And he said, oh my God.
Yeah.
I could do this.
It's funny you should mention that, because I vividly remember seeing Jamie Redknapp when he was doing like his early punditry, and that would have been in that season that Delap was doing that for Stoke, and him saying that he played for Southampton with Delap under Harry Redknapp, and they didn't know it was a thing,
right?
So they didn't ever exploit it. But in the interview that our Athletic colleague Dan Sheldon did with Clive Woodward recently, it's an incredible piece. You should check it out if you've not read it. Clive Woodward, who was obviously at Southampton as well, and you wanted to get into all of that nonsense. But he talked at quite great length about how, like, he had spotted that this guy could take a long throw, and he wanted all the other players to be able to take a long throw like Rory Delap. So the rugby manager had noticed that this thing could be used, and Harry Redknapp seemingly was just completely oblivious until like 3 years later when he rocked up at Stoke.
There's so much more depth to this, isn't there?
That feels like one of those classic things. Like, this is very much in the wheelhouse of this particular podcast, but I don't know if you read Des Lynam's autobiography. Right.
No.
Everything. Right. Des Lynam's autobiography, it's not quite I had the last laugh, but everything was his idea. Like, you know, choosing Pavarotti for Italian 90, yeah, reading out if. Was that 98?
Delap's long throw.
And Rory Delap's long throw. But no, Clive Woodward saying, oh yeah, I saw that before anyone else. That feels like sort of thing.
Very possible.
This is like deadly Doug Ellis claiming he invented the bicycle kick. let's rule on this, because, I mean, as reluctant as I was to include players who did one thing repeatedly and well and became overwhelmingly known for it, I do feel like it's in the spirit of the team to have him. So I'm typing the name Rory Delap. It's my midfield. So our midfield so far is Temuri Kutsbaya, Rory Delap. And I feel now, just to balance these things out, James, we need a midfielder overwhelmingly known for one wonder goal. So I give you Mario Stanic and Lillian Nallis, who, as Tom Woodhead says, as far as I'm aware, scored an absolute screamer versus Leeds and then never played football again.
Those are both good. Wasn't Stanic the first game of the season? And I think the Nallis one was like maybe the third or fourth game of the season.
Mm.
And I think it being early in the season for some reason makes it feel like almost more of a freak. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, agreed. And also,
rather than like having had a whole good season and then doing it in like March,
yeah,
doing it early and then just basically sacking it off for the rest of the season is much better.
Yeah, I appreciate all of that logic. We should also point out that Stanic scored 2 wonder goals on his debut against West Ham, if I remember rightly. So it doesn't count. So
Taibbi principle, though, people will only remember one.
Okay, let's take a vote. Nick, Stanic or Nallis?
Nallis.
James?
Stanic for me, I think.
Lillian Nallis. And it comes down to which goal can I picture in my head more, and it's Lillian Nallis's. And you know, Stanic was, I mean, I know this shouldn't count, but I know he had more of a reputation across Europe.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I feel like this should be It's not important, but it can be the tiebreaker. So Lilian Nellis, Tamuri Ketsbier, and Rory Delap.
The other name that I had written down was a bit too meta for this podcast, which is Renato Sanchez.
Yeah,
the Joel Golby throwing his phone into the bin at this stage.
I want to keep the door open for him, though. As we said last week, I want to keep the door open for him to expand on that legacy.
Yeah.
And not just be known for that. So if we do this again in 2 years' time, which I'm not ruling out, then Renato Sanchez may well be in the case.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
But let's get to the exciting end, the business end of a themed 11, and that's the strikers, our three-pronged strike force. A very obvious name, which we will leave to the end. I can't imagine that was it. But let's start with a slightly less obvious name, but still incredibly obvious candidate. James Marco Boogers.
Okay. Hey, yeah, is that the other end of the spectrum from the guy I was going to mention? I mean, Boogers again, another Harry Redknapp masterstroke, right? So what is his thing that he lived? Did he live in a caravan? Is that true, or is that a horrible sort of offensive rumor? I mean, now I've said it on a podcast, I'm slightly.
I know
worried.
It feels cliche to even be discussing whether him living in a caravan was true or not.
I think it adds a sort of different category to the team, that things you remember someone for that actually didn't happen.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
Still, yeah. Very, very, very much part of the criteria. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if he was a striker. I think he may well have been signed for a cool million and then sent off on his debut for scything down Gary Neville in a genuinely shocking challenge. So, yeah, bad tackles get you right in the equation for this. Nick, here's a few more names. Paitim Kasami, says Ian Woodcock. In my mind, he turned up, played that game at Palace, scored one of the best goals ever and left. Wikipedia states otherwise.
Was he a striker? Was he not a midfielder? I don't want to kind of nitpick here, but he then went on to play for Forest in a kind of one of the seasons where Forest signed about 18 players and none of them were heard from again. So in my head, he doesn't qualify, but I'm aware that a brief cameo for Nottingham Forest in the Championship doesn't necessarily bleed into the wider consciousness. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm prepared to accept Kasami. On a sort of similar vein, one of the names I've got down here is Andrea Salenzi, of course.
Do you know what? When I invited you on this podcast, I thought, I wonder how long it will be till he mentions Andrea Salenzi. Yeah. And the answer is 43 minutes and 17 seconds, which is disappointing. But I suppose that's the way that the team is structured, so you really didn't get much of a chance. But what's he remembered for?
Maybe he's remembered for
being the first Italian in the Premier League
and also being terrible. So I don't know. Yeah. I think he's broadly remembered as being the first Italian in the Premier League, and the fact that he was terrible means that is the only thing that he's remembered for, that he did nothing else. So
I mean, that was in the days where like a kind of exotic signing from another country coming in and being rubbish would have been more of a novelty. Like, you kind of get that so often now, you know, especially at clubs kind of outside the top side.
Well, it was definitely.
So he was kind of a bit of a, you know,
it was
a bit of a trendsetter.
Still in the era that a player, that a particular group of countries, Italy and Brazil being the obvious ones, meant that you were good. You were automatically a quality player. And I think he had played a couple of times for Italy, so that sort of accelerated it even more. Well, he's played for Italy. They're good, aren't they? This guy must be amazing.
This is all solid stuff, foundation stuff, for Lindsay, but I need a moment from him, and there isn't one. There isn't one, is there? Just to return to Boogers for a second, producer Dave, the secret hero of this episode, says, Caravan is confirmed bullshit. It came from a misheard conversation and ended up on Club Call. sorry to dwell on the 90s so often, but Club Call, really, really, that's just fantastic. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe Boogers sliding out of contention. Kasami, not... doesn't really float my boat. Silenzi.
Can I chuck another name in? Let me chuck another name in. I think this is going to be controversial. Right. I know I've done a bit of visualization on this podcast before, so I want you both to kind of close your eyes, and I'm going to say the name of a player, and I want you to think of the first Premier League goal that player scored that comes into your head. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee I can tell you which goal it is, and it'll be the only Premier League goal you'll think of that from this player. Okay? Mm-hmm. Ready? Yeah. Cristiano Ronaldo.
What, the free kick against Portsmouth?
Yes, correct. Correct, Nick, right?
I genuinely can't think of any other goal he scored in the Premier League.
It's the only thing you'll ever see of him, and I've seen it. I thought of this last night, and then it was tweeted this morning by Sky Sports Premier League as among the best Premier League goals ever seen. It's the only thing you ever see.
Imagine if we put him in the team. Imagine.
Chuck him in. That's all he did.
Weirdly, I
wind-up merchants.
Yeah. When I think of that goal, I think of the camera then cut into David James, who did a sort of, well, what do you expect me to do about that face? Which, this is a piece that would be too niche even for The Athletic, I think. But I've always wanted to find out which defender was shouting at David James, well, why don't you save that?
I'm sure he's gettable. Surely someone's got his number.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, adventurous shout, I'll give you it. But yeah, we're not going that far. Can you imagine the replies, the ratio? Some slightly bland names to go through next. Bafétimbi Gomis for his Lion goal celebration. Nah, not enough. Sorry, John F. Ketamine. Johnny Meeson James says, James Vaughan, the youngest goal scorer in Premier League history. I believe that is still the case. But he also did. Also had that horrendous looking injury where he severed an artery in his foot, and there was a picture of blood dripping off his boot. So that's two things.
Also, I mean, the youngest Premier League goal scorer until you said that, I thought was James Milner.
Who's the third name in this equation? James Vaughan, James Milner, and
wasn't it Rooney for like 2 weeks before
maybe.
Milner?
Yeah, I suppose it is, isn't it? Yeah, don't start suggesting Rooney as well. You're a loose cannon.
We can't get into what he's remembered for.
As it is. Some further names for you. Getting into the real territory, I think, that we should be, Nick. Angus Byrne says, Iago the corner Aspas.
Yeah.
And also another
classic of the was comically bad in the Premier League and then has gone on to... Actually, he's quite good, says man who
sullies it a bit,
says man who watches more Spanish football than you.
I don't want to get lots of replies from people whose Twitter image is them sort of silhouetted against a La Liga stadium background saying, well, actually, he's done very well for Celta de Vigo. Yeah, it's not exciting enough, really. Sam says, Stamford Bridge's Dong Fang Zhu only ever gets mentioned near the end of every season when the Guard of Honour debate comes up again. So... I don't know. But then, of course, there's a story about him being signed as well and not settling. So, again, not massively keen on that. But, okay, I'm going to stop firing names at you and we'll actually discuss a few. Nick, don't visit Seattle, says Facundo Sava of Fulham. And that mask shoved down his sock. That's it. He's a box ticket here, isn't he?
Yeah, he was one of the first names I wrote down on this. Mm. Yeah, my forward line is Salenzi, Facundo Sava. And I'm losing confidence in this already, but Michu.
Too good.
Yeah,
too good.
Well,
good extended run of form. Go on.
All you know is £2.5 million, yeah. Pounds, right?
Which then became obviously a measurement of other transfers. You can buy X number of Michus.
Celebration.
Yeah, and
he had the currency thing.
The currency thing. What was the currency thing?
No, his name was, said, synonymous with the valuation of footballers. So yeah. So that leads me to two more names, which I feel are in contention with Facundo Sava for our forward line. This was the second most nominated name, James. Do you know who this may have been? The second most nominated name in the Twitter replies for this episode?
Federico Makeda.
Yes, it's Federico Kiko Makeda.
Great turn by Makeda! Astonishing!
so many.
Should I be worried that I've come up with all these obvious answers?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine to be obvious for this one, I think. Yeah, we really are slumming it intellectually, but that's fine. Federico Kiko Makeda, are you happy with that?
Yeah.
It's bang on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Great goal.
Did nothing else.
He scored a second goal, didn't he? He did score a second goal. And that, again, it's the same thing no one remembers, do they?
Producer Dave is saying Adebayor. Emmanuel Adebayor.
Yeah, that is good.
Oh, come on.
No.
But the main thing, the first thing you'll think of, and the only thing you'll think of for ages with Adebayor is that celebration.
But what comes second?
Goal he scored against
Spurs. Absurdly good goal against Spurs.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He's.
And just, he was sought after centre forward, not having it. No. Not having it. Look at producer Dave deleting it from the running order. Tail between legs. Anyway, Federico Makeda is up front. We potentially have Facundo Sava alongside him. But we cannot complete this episode without discussing what is the most, Nick, footy shocking moments, man and story imaginable. Before we talk about it, I want to play you. This was the clip on YouTube, pretty much the only defining clip of Ali Dyer on YouTube for quite a long time. And just to set the scene, this is someone filming it off their TV. It's Sky 3, a channel I never knew existed. And it's called something like Football Years, which is a program that never should have existed. And I've made a little montage of all the people, all the talking heads that were brought in to talk about Ali Dyer. And I just want you to mentally tick them off as you hear them.
I kept getting phone calls from a guy at the training ground anyway, Georgie Weir. Georgie Weir was World Footballer of the Year.
Hey, hello, Harry. How are you?
Lovely, George. What, do you want to play for West Ham? No, I have a player for you.
All right, don't tell anyone else. You've not found Ferguson or anyone, have you? Right. And you think I've got a clue?
Southampton thought they had the new George Weir and unleashed him against Leeds.
Bit of drama about it, this new signing, an air of mystery, you know.
He was absolutely crap and had to be re-substituted.
Dyer by name and Dyer by nature.
That is the greatest flag in football of all time.
Bob Mills and Paul Tomkinson is so talking heads.
And here's the guy who was the host of David Brent's Blind Date at the nightclub in The Office. just to round it all off. The thing about Ali Dyer, and we need to approach this from a reasonably postmodern perspective, I feel. I want to pat football content collectively on the back for squeezing every last drop of juice from the Ali Dyer story. It's quite an achievement, really, given how there isn't actually that much to play with.
Yeah, I mean, how long was he on the pitch? Sort of 37 minutes or something stupid like that. Oh, maybe a bit longer, because I think it was an injury to Letizia, wasn't he? He came on. And yeah, but yeah, he was
like
at
Paul
the club.
Sort of there, just telling us what happened. It's really good. Yeah, he just came audition. On, didn't he? And he oh, it was terrible.
Letizia, wasn't it? Letizia.
I think they sold him to Spurs.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, for him to have been there for sort of 4 days, and I think the payoff is that he kind of did a bunk and left the club and ended up at, was it Gateshead?
Yeah, Gateshead.
So he's basically done a runner to the other end of the country in the hope of not being caught. Presumably that wasn't actually why he did it. But we've done very well collectively as a football media to milk that
absolutely
one dry.
Sensational. Nick, I don't think anyone ever comes out of telling the story well. I mean, Matt Letitier seems to get asked about this on a sort of annual basis, and his appetite for telling it just gets less and less over time.
Look, if you ask him about Ali Dyer, at least he's not talking about something else. So, you know, people keep asking him about Ali Dyer. That's fine with me.
Yeah, so in summary, there's nothing more to say about Ali Dyer. So he's obviously in the team alongside Facundo Sava and Federico Makeda. This is kind of an underwhelming forward line.
Chuck Ronaldo.
No, I'm not having it.
Adam's gonna put this team on Twitter later, and his, you know, people, James, will take it out of context.
So, I'm happy. I'm happy with that forward line. It's got a bit of everything. It's got a guy who was, you know, comically, infamously shit. We've got a guy who had a little quirk but didn't do anything else, and a guy who scored a goal essentially on his debut, but then didn't go on after that. So he peaked so early. So really, have got the full tapestry. Let's run through this team. Before I ask you the final question, the final piece of this jigsaw. In goal, Peter Enkelman. A back four of Pascal Chimbonda, Eric Edmond, Phil Babb and William Prunier. A midfield three of Tamuri Ketsbaya, Rory Delap, shame, Lillian Nalis. Up front, Ali Dyer, Facundo Sava and Federico Makeda. But, James, Nick, who manages this lot?
I'd say it's got to be Paul Jewell, isn't it?
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Paul Jewell, who kept
famously
Bradford
kept
up in...
Wigan up. Bradford and Wigan, famously, yeah. Great escapes for both. So that would be the one thing. Again, Google it if you don't believe me, but that's the one thing that he'd be...
Yeah, right.
For.
Just after you've Googled Stephen Postma, Google...
Yeah. Close that tab and open up another one.
Fucking stop it.
Google image search if necessary.
Once was enough. No, I'm not happy with Paul Jewell. With Paul Jewell. Good body of work.
Works on a couple of levels, that. Yeah.
For God's sake. Pathetic. Nick, give me some names. I've only got one in my brain.
Well, I'd be quite...
A one-trick pony manager.
Yeah, a couple. Christian Gross and Felix Magath are the two that I had in mind.
Is Felix
Train tickets and cheese?
Train tickets and cheese. Yeah, there you go. See,
train ticket beats cheese in my book because there was visual evidence. I mean, we had to take Breda Hangeland's word for the cheese, didn't we?
I think it's been kind of quite widely corroborated, the cheese story, and he's known as, while a good manager in Germany, sort of a noted lunatic as well. So I think we can be fairly confident in the cheese story. But yeah, I mean, I would go train ticket over the cheese.
Yeah, it's got to be train ticket Christian Gross, doesn't it? Actually, let's get this right, James. It was a travel card, wasn't it?
That is true, yeah. I assume it must have 1-4, I guess, probably.
Yeah, but it's a very oft-cited opening press conference, probably beaten only by Jose Mourinho, who you definitely can't have, and before you start getting any ideas about famous Portuguese-es. So we're happy with Christian Gross is the summary of that, aren't we? Little nods from both of you, delighted. Christian Gross... What a job you have of teasing one more memorable moment after this rabble. Well, actually, now we look at it. Now you look at this team. Enkelman in goal. Fairly functional fullbacks. Phil Babb, William Prunier. A solid-looking midfield. Athletic. Ketsbaier, Delap, Nalis. Dyer up front doing his thing. Facundo Sava just waiting for his moment. Makeda. Where do you think this would finish in an average Premier League table, James? Getting relegated, right?
Yeah, I mean, they are going to get relegated, yeah. So there's no better way of putting that, really, is there? I don't think.
This feels like a sort of record low points total, Nick, sort of team.
It is. It's incredibly Derby County 2007, 2008, isn't it? And without wanting to go back to Paul Jewell again, it really does have that kind of shambolic vibe of the team, which has been completely thrown together over the course of half a season.
Yeah. I also, it looks a very sort of Portsmouth late 2000s, Nick, as well. You know, because there's a slightly exotic aspect to it all. You know, these players are from all over the place.
It has the vibe of, you know how when a team does something weird, like, well, all those kind of Portsmouth signings and the Derby signings, if depending on how they do, their method of bringing those together will either be the reason that they succeeded or the reason that they failed. They'll the pieces written afterwards will all say kind of, well, of course, this esoteric recruitment strategy, bringing players in from all different kind of strange places, that's why they qualified for the UEFA Cup. And then if they get relegated, you say, yep, that's why they went down.
I can't believe you've well actually'd Portsmouth, but you have. maybe we should have thought about a team who are only known for one thing, but that is clearly Derby 07-08, isn't it? Fantastic stuff. There were more layers to that after all. This wasn't just a throwaway concept that I thought would be a bit cheap. It was brilliant stuff. Really good existential chat from us all. Cheers to you, Nick. You won't just be remembered for one thing now.
Well, obviously not. We'll be remembered for an inexplicable spike in the Googling of Stephen Postma.
Yeah, fantastic. Glad you mentioned that again. James, your legacy very much sealed now. Congratulations.
Is it? What, you mean this podcast?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, brilliant. Fantastic, thank you.
Shame on you for suggesting Cristiano Ronaldo, but in a weird way, what an incredible shout that was. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed the Premier League Players We Remember for Precisely One Thing 11. That was great fun. See you next week.
I'm Ellis James.
I'm Mike Bibbins.
And I'm Steph Guerrero.
I would kill off with any footballer to get a Premier League
absolutely.
Game, would you? Not a problem.
Ian Dowie.
We've got a comedy podcast called The Socially Distant Sports Bar.
It's Liverpool versus Arsenal here at Anfield. It's the big kickoff. New player Mike Bibbins, who got off with Ian Dowie in the week. Jurgen Klopp, of course, said that he's perfectly happy to play Bibbins in a front three alongside Salah, Firmino. Bibbins, 48 years of age, has never played football, but he snugged Ian Dowie for 2.5 to 3 minutes as stipulated according to Premier League guidelines. Darby said he's got no idea how good Bubbins is. Word on the street is that he's not great. He's morbidly obese.
It's about sport, but not really.
He's not fit and he doesn't know where to stand. His first touch is woeful, and I mean woeful. But you got off of the end, Harry. That's, those are the rules, son. It's a new guy that I don't agree with it. Gary don't agree with it. None of the explanations.
Shut up. I'm gonna die.
Download it from wherever you get your podcasts.
The Athletic.